Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of, I guess I'll say, three ways now. First, you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload something to that once a week. I usually put it on my Twitter, Stephen the Warman, one word. Also, you are listening to this podcast through the iTunes search engine. Enter Warman Kickfighting Show, and my show pops right up. One more thing, we've been linked on Combat Press lately, so I want to thank them, and I want to do my best to keep getting the support I love out to you guys. I had a great weekend watching kickboxing and Muay Thai, and I'm real excited to talk to you guys about it. As promised, I said I was going to put up an episode on Friday. I said I did it strategically because I told you guys I was going to do one every week throughout the first 3 months of the year, and this completes that journey. I decided to go Friday and then Sunday. So really, we just did an episode 2 days ago, but the reason why I'm keeping them so close together is simply because I wanted to do kind of like a breakdown right after I'd watched the fights, the day after. So sometimes you watch like some boxing podcasts or MMA podcasts, they'll literally do a show like right after the event. Sometimes people are just a little bit burned out from watching all that kickboxing or boxing or MMA action. So I decided that instead of doing it right after the Glory event and right after the ACB event, I was like, I'm going to wait one day and then I'll go ahead and let everybody rest and then get it to them on a Sunday. So I will do my best with this particular podcast to give you technical breakdown, but really story. That's what I want to focus on more than anything. Story is very important because we always want to know where we're going and what this means. And sometimes the fights have a story just in themselves, just in the action that takes place. The most common way we know stories is, where does this take us next? Because you beat this person, now you fight this person. You know, that's the most common way. And I'm going to do some of that. But the main thing I'm going to do is I'm going to try to give you narrative for the action in the actual ring. So I'm excited about this. Really had a lot of fun, as I said before, watching these fights. I'm going to go ahead and go from the top backwards. We're going to go ahead and start with Glory. Glory had a great event in Brussels. The crowd filled up a little bit slow, so some of the, you know, fun undercard fights didn't get seen by everybody, but when it got to the main card, I thought the crowd was pretty good. The seats for your casuals, the non-VIP seats, the ones really close, those areas were full from jump. So when you look at the upper deck, that part of this, you know, event, that was like full throughout. Like, I really thought that part of the crowd, your casual, those were for your fans, I should say. And then for people who were checking it out, people who were of a little bit more means, I thought that they didn't fill up until the main event. But nevertheless, it's a fun card. I'll go ahead and start breaking it down. 19-year-old Tijani Bastadi gets another victory as he stops Sabri Benhenia Batikio in the second round. Good action, good back and forth. I thought that this had the potential to be the fight of the night. And Henia, in the first round, he was able to play the combination kick game back. You know, he's a long guy. He plays with teeps. He plays with step-up knees when he gets into the pocket. And he doesn't have the most power in his low kicks, but he'll shoot it. I thought that Bastadi did a good job with his boxing to knee flow. His combination to low kick flow came here and there. But he really did a good job of, when he had his moments to throw hands, he did. He figured out real quick that Henia's slight frame and guard were not going to hold up against the offensive attack that he put together. So he, after what was good back and forth for about, you know, 2 minutes and 30 seconds, you could kind of feel Bastadi take control. Bastadi start to realize, I'm 2 years younger, 3 years younger. I believe Henio was 22 and Bastadi's 19. But I think he started to realize that physically I'm the more imposing of these two guys. So he started to dance a little less as far as movement, and he started to just walk Henio down, start to throw shots. Henio, in the beginning, was able to throw in between and try to combo back, try to return the offense that he was receiving. But in the end, he started to stay behind his guard on the ropes, and Bastadi turned it on. He scored a down, three downs in the second round for the KO stoppage. But the big question, of course, here is, if you're Henia's corner, at what period of time do you consider throwing in the towel? And I remember I saw someone on Twitter, they say, man, I consider throwing in the towel. And I remember thinking myself, you know, that's a lot of shots. I'd wondered if there was a standing eight count. There may not be a standing eight count, but I did think that Henia had fallen into the ropes a few times, so you can make the argument for calling a standing eight. Nevertheless, he took a lot of clean shots. It's the returning back. That's the main thing that makes me start to think, should we have a stoppage or standing eight count, or should you consider throwing in the towel? I think all of that is very, very important. And in the end, my apologies if you guys notice a slight glitch. There's just a slight glitch there. Sorry, back to what I was saying. When you look at the decision to stop a fight, you know, one of the big things that comes into play is simply how much return offense are you seeing? Do you see, even if your guy's taking big shots, if he's fighting back and he's landing, it can give you a good thing, you know, a good gauge for how much he's in trouble or not. Doesn't mean that you're still not in trouble, but if you're throwing back and you're landing clean, it lets you know if that person's still in the fight. When they just hang out on the ropes with the guard up and clean shots are getting through, and this happens for a long period of time. And what I mean by long period of time is I'm talking like 10 seconds. If you see 10 seconds of actual action where a guy just stays behind his earmuffs and he's taking clean shots despite his guard, and you don't see him moving left or right or reaching in for a clinch, it's time to consider, okay, the action that follows those 10 seconds, if that doesn't tell me something, a reflection to his efforts to return fire in the fight, I might have to consider stopping it. In particular, if you have someone young like Henya, you know. Bastadi was able to pour it on, scored the three downs in that second, and really got him out of it. The last down was just, it was just really him just, you know, Henya just kind of getting beat up. And it was almost like, ref, when are you going to step in here? He waited till he went down. So as for Bastadi, they asked, what should you do during the broadcast? What would you do with him next? Do you put him in there with somebody good? No, you do not. This is the perfect type of fight for him to have. Keep moving him at this pace. You don't want to move any more than the way he's being moved now. Really, really good stuff in terms of slowly bringing on the next opposition, slowly bringing on the next guy. It needs to stay this way for this individual, in my personal opinion. So go ahead, build him slow. After he gets four fights, then maybe you say, all right, let's go ahead and try a Jonsi or something like that. And maybe even if he gets stopped by Jonsi, who cares? The thing is, you moved him slow and you picked your moment before you had him step up. But we want to go about this the right way, and throwing him in there with these wolves wouldn't be a good idea. The Kwehi Meng fight, who won early on the card, I'm going to talk about a little bit, that might not be a bad idea. But good stuff here by Bastadi. Hrakagorian, dominant 30-27 victory over Pavel Garay. Let me tell you something about Garay. I thought that despite the fact that he was clearly, and I mean clearly, taking clean, effective offense every single round, getting walked down, Hrak was so determined to get the KO that I think that he neglected a lot of the combination low kick pressure that he had, you know, produced from the beginning. Because Garage guy who has no KO stoppages, you would think that a KO would happen on an accident in some of these places, but no. A guy who had zero KO stoppages, he gets the opportunity to go against Gregorian, who is really a killer. So it's almost like he was brought in to get stopped. But he showed me something. Round three, after he didn't go away, after he, you know, pretty much got beat, from, you know, bell to bell for two rounds, I thought that Pavel Garay did a good job of trying to punch here and there. Every once in a while, he'd look for an opportunity to go second. Just means that after you take fire, you look to fire back with a clean combo and then go back to your guard. I thought that he looked and found moments where he could be effective there. I really did. So moving forward, I think he's a really good person to use if you want to, like, move somebody or try somebody out. Like, for example, we've got some welterweights from the States. And I talked about Richard Abraham getting the opportunity to fight in Europe, you know, and the Sweden card next month. That is a perfect example of, I believe it's Sweden, my apologies if it's not. That is a perfect example of, okay, these are the kind of fights, it actually might be Denmark, sorry. These are the kind of fighters that if you want to bring somebody over from the States to go against, this is your fight. This is your fighter. This guy is perfect for that role. You put him in there, he's going against a guy who's giving him good offensive back and forth and finding moments, but it's not a threat to KO him. you can move them against a European-style guy who doesn't have the most awesome tools. So I would use Pavel Gorac moving down the road. As for Burak Yegorian, you know, I think looking for the KO kind of hurt his ability to get it here. If he had been patient, I think that Gorai might have threw more offense at him, which would have given him the opportunity to find something in between. But when he just tried to kind of hulk him down and walk him down and find the KO, I think that it opened up the door for Gorai to go the distance, because he knew he just had to stay behind his guard. And if I live behind my guard, then I should be fine. But Gregorian's still one of the best welterweights in the world. He needs to go against better opposition. You know, a Kangula fight would actually be a nice fight for him. You know, that Kangula's coming off of the loss. I really, really like that. So we'll see moving forward what they do with him. But good victory for Gregorian. The only thing that sucked was this wasn't later on the card. So, I mean, these guys are Belgium-based fighters. And, you know, once trained by Sommers, the female boxer, like, they have a good history of being ticket sellers in that area, but they were so early in the card that some of the people that might have showed up to see him didn't get to see him perform. So, good stuff for Gregorian. We move on. Quego Meng gets a victory over Killian Maloon. This is simple. Maloon, in no round, offered enough offense to win any round. Somehow, it was a split decision. Don't know how that happened. Split decision to the tone of one person gave Milan, like, I think it was 27 or 30-27 in his favor, which is just unacceptable and insane. The other four judges were for Meng. Meng was just clearly better. I just thought that his skill set, his movement, his boxing, he scored and he had all the volume. I just thought that it was made easier by the fact that the story of this fight was Maloon not even giving himself the opportunity to win on the cards. I just think he didn't offer any offense, whereas Meng did the consistent work throughout. Moving forward, Meng Bastadi is a nice fight to make. And again, it shows, and I'm going to talk about it again, Meng's victory shows the emergence of the Chinese kickboxer, who just, it starts when they're having success in China on their own promotions. Because I've been watching it. There were some losses on their promotion. You know, there were some losses of their athletes on their promotion against, you know, fellow Asian and European fighters. But now we're starting to see them have success, of course, on the cards, Kunlun and so on. We've got, you know, Wei Ru was the one who just won the, you know, K1 lightweight championship just 4 weeks ago. So we've got his victory. And then on another card I'm going to talk about where another Chinese athlete was used, we're starting to see it consistently that the Chinese are producing athletes to not just win locally, but now they're going out and abroad and testing their skill set. And that's vital. That is so important. Shout out to Meng on getting the victory here. Chinese TV deal, I heard about that, so it was probably played live. Good stuff. Good stuff for Meng. Burak Yegorian gets a big-time stoppage over Anton Petrov. And I'm going to tell you guys, Burak Yegorian, in my personal opinion, as far as a reflection of the most skilled guys in the world in the sport, you know, like the most skilled guys, a reflection of that, I am the biggest fan in the world of Burak Yegorian as a ambassador style-wise for what I believe is the highest level of kickboxing. Like, if you put him out there, if you say, hey, Steven, I've never seen this sport before ever in my life, who should I watch? I would probably find something with Burak Yegorian. Another guy who comes into play is Nicky Holtzkin, of course. Guys who's just their styles. Robin Van Roosmalen's got a lot of them. Their styles reflect not just their high-level skill set, but just the entertaining, the thing that makes the sport entertaining and great. That's what you get from their style. So when he came out here, and basically what happened was he got into his combination low kick flow early. And I thought that there were some moments here and there where, to the best of his ability, I thought that Petrov was trying to fight back, but the low kick work was so consistent that when we got into early round one, you could already see Petrov was bothered by the low kicks. You could already see they were hurt. So then he started to try to wait on the check, and this is the beauty of this. He tried to wait on the check. Wait with the check just means when you get someone hurt and all of a sudden they go to their guard and then they just hold their leg up preparing for the low kick before it happens. Mrakigorian's been doing this for a long time. He's seen that. So he just let his hands go free. Scored a bunch of big shots. Down goes Petrov for the first down. Petrov then gets up and decides, all right, I am doomed if I try to just protect my legs. I'm going to have to try to throw back. He gets a little bit more aggressive with his hands, despite the fact that he doesn't have as much in the shots without having the strength on that lead leg. And then the next thing you know, bang, another low kick scores after a combination hits right on the spot. He hops, waves to the ref that he's done, stays into the corner until the standing count is done. That's how it's done right there. That is how it's done, folks. Big time kickboxing. Like just... It's the game at its best. It is the flow, the dance of playing with your combinations and going into, you know, your kick game as well. It's playing with them both. It doesn't necessarily have to be a combination of low kick. I'm going to give you another example later when I talk about Alizo's fight. But this kid, I'm telling you, not kid anymore, still in their mid-20s. It freaks me out that they both kind of came on the scene 19, 20 years old. But this guy is such a talent. Such a talent, and I'm excited to see what comes from him, you know, moving down the road. Just fought for the title, so anything's good for him. Meng, I think, would be moved too quickly to be put in this situation, but a fight with Jonsi would be awesome. A Jonsi fight would be worth the price of admission for sure. So definitely want to see Mrakigorian go against any of those athletes. We then move on to Sitichai Sitsong Pinon getting a stoppage victory over Dylan Salvador. And for three rounds, I thought Salvador did his best. Like, I really did it. He went for it. For me, as a sporting fan, there used to be a runner. I can't remember the distance. I think he did the 5,000. But his name's Prefontaine and from America. And there was a really... you know, the last time he made it to the Olympics, but the guy who was in his weight class or who was in his group was the best in the world. That guy couldn't be beat at that distance. And in the final lap, Prefontaine could have just taken silver and just coasted behind this guy. Everybody would be like, you meddled. You did a good job. You're going to go ahead and, compete for this down the road. Or you're going to win gold in 4 years. Just right now, that guy's in his prime. He's at his best. Down the road, you're going to get that opportunity. Prefontaine, getting into the final lap, just burst and takes the lead and does everything in his power to go for gold. He burns himself out, doesn't get gold, doesn't even medal because he burnt himself out trying to go for it. He could have stayed the same pace, but he went for the gold. I felt like Dylan Salvador could have played a simple pace, got his, loss, and, no harm, no foul. You know what I'm saying? You already got a victory over Sitichai once upon a time, whatever. No harm, no foul. You go out there. You do your best. I truly believe that the aggression in which he played with his hook low kick game, when he got in the opportunity to throw offense in the pocket, he did. I truly believe he was working. Like, I really believe that he went for it. Now, a lot of people are going to be critical of the finish. I'll talk about it in a little bit. But he played hook low kick. He played with boxing. He did everything in his power. Sitichai is just the best. You know, he's just so good. He was able to score clean shots with the boxing. He's always been brutal with the step knees. The step knees started early. They built, and he got him out of there in the fourth round thanks to the step knee work. And he was able to play the combination low kick, too. Sitichai's chin is money. Like, a lot of people don't realize it. He takes some good shots, and he just kept going. Salvador had the effort, had the grit, bit down in his mouthpiece, and really did try to win this fight. But in the fight that he won, it was only a three-rounder. So he was able to hold up the aggression of throwing combination low kick, hook low kick, power boxing. He's able to hold that up because the fight was a lot shorter. This fight, a lot longer. And because the five rounds were there, he burnt himself out after the three trying to keep up with the pace. And I don't even necessarily, some people had it 2-1. I think I gave him the second. But by the time we got to round four, the writing was on the wall. He had slowed. The pace that he gave, that he put into play to try to win, it had left him. And we go to the end of the fourth. He's not throwing back. He's just walking back. He takes a knee to the body. He goes down. He stands up and he spits his mouthpiece out. He was almost to the end of the round, but he gets up and he spits his mouthpiece out. And, you know, with I think the final count was 2:58 into the round. So 2 seconds left, he would have been on the stool. But he was done. And a lot of people I saw on Twitter that they're like, man, why did he spit out his mouthpiece? Why did he? Is that quitting? He should have kept going. Like, a lot of that came into play. A lot of people, you know, wonder what was there, you know, why he made that decision. I just think he gave it his all, and at the very end, he didn't have anything left. Like, that's how I personally feel. And I don't think that there's any shame in it. I think he did his best. I think that he put it on the line. I think he could have played conservative in spots. I think he went for it. But he didn't have the ability to KO the guy, you know, didn't have the ability to stop Serge High. He just worked as hard as he could, and it wasn't his night, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with losing to one of the best guys in the world. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later as well. So what do we do moving forward? Serge High, Sid Song, Pinong, you're going to need another tournament to offer a blood sacrifice or something, because you have done your job, you know, beating Robin Van Roosmalen, now beating Dylan Salvador, very, very skilled fighter. And you've done your job. You know, you've done your job. Anybody you've thrown your way, you've beaten. Could they put together a Georgia Petrosian fight? I know it's going to be harder because, you know, Petrosian very much seems anti-Southpaw as far as his, you know, matchmaking has been done since he's not been. And he's fought him in the past, you know what I'm saying? He's, you know, fought guys who, you know, went his way up to K1 success. He fought guys who were Southpaw, but since then, he's still one of the best guys in the world, and I think his skill set will hold up. So I won't jump on him too much, but in his, the matchmaking they've done with him, I haven't seen a lot of orthodox or a lot of Southpaw guys. They've mainly been orthodox. Him moving to Bellator Kickboxing, it's still a co-promotion, but that hurts their ability to make that fight too. So Super Bond's out there. Maybe they could do that. The Kunlun opportunities are opportunities for him to, you know, maybe do that bout again. They've met before, of course. Anything with Sidichai is a good thing. I like watching this guy compete. Dylan Salvador, like I said, no shame in that loss. Now all it is back to the drawing board. Get your work together. I mean, if you're his coach, I would might even try to get him in there in like a month or so just to make sure that confidence is okay, just because it's tough to go out like that, to give it your best and then to have nothing to go down the stretch. It's tough to go out like that. So we'll see what happens to Salvador moving forward. But I really like him, and it's crazy. He went from a late entry into the tournament that he wasn't even in to fighting for, you know, the Glory, you know, championship at that weight 3 months later. So shout out to Dylan Salvador, a guy who I've been so high on since the first time I saw him in Thai fight when he was 19 years old. I was like, this guy's got the best potential to have kickboxing success. I said it on my podcast years ago. So it's really cool to see him get to this stage and do well. It's just, it wasn't his night to beat the best. Next fight in the card I'm going to brag about. Brag. I had seceded the argument. I was like, man, a month and a half ago when Hezzy Hergus and Chai Lewis Perry was made, I had posted on Twitter, there's no way this fight's going to happen. And then somebody said, why would you say that? And I go, man, I'm telling you, it's just something about his fights. I'm not going to get into, I saw people, you know, calling him cowards and all that kind of stuff. I'm not going to go into any of that stuff. All I'm going to say is there seems to be a series of bad luck with Chai Lewis Perry and his fights. Like, he kept – DeMauro Dennis, he fought him, but that was a replacement fight. Dennis was on the undercard there. I'm thinking he was on the undercard. He might not even been on the undercard. He could have just been a short-notice fight. But he was a replacement, so that was his second opportunity. His first opportunity was against Kim, so that was a full camp. Got to go against that. After that, Chai Lewis Perry, his last few fights, the green fight, that was a replacement fight. And then another one fell through on him. I believe the Hesdy fight, like back in the day, fell through. So it's like it kept consistently happening, you know, on one side or the other, it just kept happening. Here, we get to the day before, they get to the weigh-ins, and in my mind, I'm sitting there thinking, you know what, man, I think I'm going to be wrong. I admit it, I missed it. They weren't going to fight. And then all of a sudden, I'm watching the broadcast, and they move Sidichai versus Salvador up, and they move Perry and Hergus to the main event. So my first thought was, okay, That must be a Fight Pass thing. They want to finish it with a, you know, KO, best possibility of having that happen action-wise is to have heavyweights, so they moved that card around. So I understood that. I really did understand that. Then they say on the commentary that, Perry, who they'd already interviewed in the back before this. So this is what made it even worse. They already interviewed him in the back before. So he's like, you know, saying a couple words about, you know, like just a little kind of Perry trash talk, how he gets down, whatever. So we've already seen my man. You know, we have seen this dude. Next thing you know, after seeing this kid, you know, he goes in the back and maybe he put on a front just for the video. Like maybe he put on a face just for the, you know, the interview. But he was too sick to fight. And they called the bout and they canceled it. And of course, you're heartbroken for Hesdy. He put in the work. He posts videos all the time about him training between him and his wife, Denise Kielholtz. They post videos of each other training. So I knew he was putting the work in. And style wise, I was like, this is Hargis's fight to win. And then when this fight doesn't happen, I'm like heartbroken for him. He put his work in. Hopefully, they give him his show money. And then as soon as the fight's over with, I see footage emerging of Perry getting into it with Hargis outside of it, and I'm like, dude, this is just not a good look. So heartbroken for Hesdy Hargis, who really is a talented guy, and I want to see him fight guys like that, the best guys, but time will tell. Tylos Perry, not sure what to think there, because you have all the physical tools. You're an absolute monster of a guy, and you can crack, but it just didn't come together. Just didn't come together again. We move into their featherweight tournament. Petr Panamarung gets a victory over Alexei Alianov. Alianov did a good job of trying to find offense in his spots. It just wasn't enough. You know, Petr Panamarung did a great job of just firing the single shots. Didn't box a lot. He really just fired mean body kicks that Alianov had no answer for. Alianov did his best to, you know, get boxing in spots and close distance in spots, but really Petr Panamarung played with just single strike kicks, fast single strike kicks. If you kicked him, he kicked you back really fast. He was just he dominated the single shots, the action. If there was any stalemate in action, he kicked. Like, he just did a good job of winning with single strikes, with very, very powerful kicks. He moves on. Next fight, absolutely the difference between an elite fighter and a guy who is just kind of working on a skill set. See here, Adam Chuck gets a clear one-sided victory over Nafi Bilalovsky. Bilalovsky, I thought, came out and at least tried, but I just think that just the skill sets were just way different. See here, Adam Chuck really did a good job. And shout out to Mike. Mike at Mike's Gym doesn't get enough credit for this. He really doesn't. He sometimes get known for just being power too much, because people look at a, you know, perfect example, of course, would be Artur Kashenko, and said, man, Artur Kashenko played a power style that wasn't his game. He was so crafty and he moved before and so on. And people were critical of him because of that. Gokhan Saki used to be a mover, kickboxing, low kick flow so much more. Now he plays a power game. So people get him about it. He is a tactical guy. Like, if you listen to him in a corner, listen to his calls out, he really does know this sport, and he will have you do things differently. Like, listen to him. And he made two calls that I heard really, really clear that I thought was to the game plan. And I listened to him, and he's yelling to Adam Chuck, and he talked about the consistency of the back leg low kick. And he kept telling him to go to the rear leg low kick, keep going to it. And it messed up the entire game, in my personal opinion, of anything Bilalovsky was trying to do. I could see that the leg was hurt. I could see that, you know, he was trying to battle in his moments. He was trying to fight back, but he was in bad shape. That leg got hurt quick, and then it affected his offense for the rest of the fight. Adam Chuck was able to build in the boxing, the step knees here and there, just a complete performance. He was just better. These guys meet in the final, and the call was close, and it comes down to what do you like. And a sport that's really based from the K-1 rules, I actually thought that Adam Chuck was going to get the decision, because he wasn't landing some boxing. He was landing a lot of boxing. This guy was just cracking. Like, he was just really, really scoring. But all of the open spots, like all of the spots that were kind of in space where you didn't know who was going to throw or you didn't know what was going to happen next, In both the first fight and the second fight, Petchmurung was the guy who answered that with some sort of single kick. Low kicks here and there, but really the body kick. And these body kicks weren't just getting to the elbow. These were getting under the elbow and hitting the body clean. We go to the cards, split decision of weird scorecarding, scorecard all over the place. Petchmurung gets the victory. He moves on to be one of the guys that fight for the title. Him versus Robert Van Roosmalen is going to be awesome because he just plays those single kicks and Robert Van Roosmalen is going to walk him down and look to throw the boxing. If he can score the shots that Adamczyk scored, I think there's a good chance that he might have Petchmurung in trouble. But if he gets any, if the fight at all plays in space, there's a really, really good chance that Petchmurung will be able to go five rounds of playing body kicks. As for Sahir Adamczyk, they still use him all the time. He is one of the only notable names, noticeable names, regular names that you see in the weight class. So I'm excited to see his future no matter what happens. I thought he was much more offensive here. For a guy who usually plays off the counter, I thought he did a really good job of playing, looking for offensive efficiency and throwing his hands first. So, and another good call from this fight, even though it didn't end up resulting in a win, was I heard that you clearly hear Mike Pestignore yell from the corner to start building off the jab, start working off the jab, and he really did, you know, close the distance and find offense behind it. I thought that it was a good fight, and I thought that, you know, different judges, he could get the win there, you know. And it was close, split decision, you know, with the five judges. Didn't go his way, but still good stuff, both guys. Jamal Ben Sadiq gets a victory over Guto Inocente in a very forgettable affair. It's, you know, I'd even tweeted during the fight that, all right, I can't wait for this one to be over. I didn't mean to sound mean. I'm just saying, action-wise, it was not a reflection of what I would say is high-level kickboxing in the heavyweight division, in particular because the generation of kickboxing is different now. Anderson Broderick Silva, he plays a very good kickboxing game. You know, of course, Rico Verhoeven, the champion, very tactical, very skilled. Those guys exist now. You know, we've got big guys. We used to have guys that were big and banged, and every once in a while they showed kickboxing ability. Now we've got guys who show kickboxing ability that every once in a while bang. So, in my personal opinion, the level of heavyweight kickboxing has improved, so anybody that goes into it, I want them to reflect that. Jamal Ben Sadiq pretty much walked Guto Inocente down, who played off of the ropes, and he would just play single kicks here and there, and every once in a while, Ben Sadiq would throw hands. I thought that once he walked him, he could just... I thought that Guto couldn't get him with anything. All he had to do was just keep throwing mean shots, just keep throwing offense. But he didn't. He did not throw. He just stood there and waited. Played, you know, a shot here and there, was a very forgettable performance, but then the real action happened. The real action happened when the fight ended. Jamal Ben Sadiq calls out Rico Verhoeven, which we knew was coming. He said it in the pre-fight interview that he was going to call him out. They gets in the ring, and then Rico is like, are you really going to, he's like, I almost fell asleep during that. He was like, are you really going to call me out after that performance? And then Ben Sadiq said, I already beat you. I was just a kid when I beat you. You know, I'm better now. That kind of deal, whatever. And then, of course, the trash talk was good. And then it went Dutch and it got super personal. And then they went back to English and it was awesome. It was, if you're going to have that fight happen down the road, you sell it with just that moment. Like, that's your commercial. That's your commercial right there. Just start floating clips of that on Facebook. Show Ben Sadiq, you know, training, fighting, winning, you know, in glory. Show the champion with the belt winning, and then show that argument. That's your commercial. That's it. They did all the job. That was what we need, more guys selling fights. And that's what we had with Badr Hari and Rico Verhoeven, the sell of it. Even though Badr injured his arm and wasn't able to continue, you had... they were posting video of him training like two times a week. You know what I'm saying? Two, three times you're getting a video with, you know, some Dutch rap song in the background and him doing some sort of workout, body getting better. And he came out, the audience, the crowd, that the people that he brought to the crowd, he sold you on it. These guys did the first part. They've got people excited about them fighting, despite the fact that Jamal Ben Sadiq didn't perform particularly well. He got us excited. The first fight did happen a billion years ago. Rico Verhoeven, Sadiq was young, but Rico was super young too. Rico was 20 years old when that fight happened, if I remember correctly. I was there. I was recording the documentary that I did for European Kickboxing that's on Vimeo, for those who are wondering. It's called Shin on Shin. So for those of you who are new to my podcast and didn't see it, go Shin on Shin and Vimeo, and then it should pop up. But in that, I was recording, and the day before, Simon Roots was telling me, you know what, I truly believe that Rico Verhoeven is going to be the future of kickboxing. He said this, and this is 2011 when I record this. He said, I truly believe this kid's going to be the future of kickboxing. He's going to have all the tools and so on. He said that in 2011. When he said it, the next day, I watched Ben Sadiq knock him out. And it's so weird because at Showtime, they ran their own, website, and they did their own results, and they did all the results for the fight except for the Rico Verhoeven loss. And even then, I was like, man, he's behind this guy. He, manages this guy. Maybe it's not the best that he does both roles, as far as, fairness in terms of me coming from a journalistic perspective. But that shows the difference between now and then, because even though Ben Sadiq got some good wins, and that kind of deal, whatever, he's never showed the consistency or had the skill set that reflected the best fighter in the world at any period of time, despite the fact that he's got some victories over Remy Bonjasky late in his career, that kind of deal, whatever. Despite that, and I mean despite it, I'm excited for them doing this again, because Rico Verhoeven did become exactly what Simon Roots said. He became the best kickboxer on the planet, and he did it by gaining decision victories over Daniel Guida, over Gokhan Saki, and then later stoppage victories over Benjamin Adebuyi. I still count the Badahari fight as a stoppage, even though it was to the arm. It just happened. It happened in its time. So that one should be all action when it goes down. We go to the title fight. Title fight was won the day before the title fight. Cedric Doumbé gets into a, gets a little fisticuffs going at the weigh-ins. They get into a fight. People have to break it up. Victory, Cedric Doumbé. Because like he did with the Myrtle fight, guys started talking trash. Guys started getting heated and animated. And what happens after all that trash talk and all that animation? The first thing, as you can imagine, the first thing that I want to watch from Johan Kangulo after all that talk is, will he go out there and still kickbox? Will he go out there and win rounds? Because he beat him by winning rounds. I watched him beat Cedric Doumbé. He was able to win rounds in that fight. Here, I can't remember him even throwing a lot of combination to kick flow. I felt like the entire time in this fight, he had one goal and one goal only. Try to knock out Cedric Doumbé. And Cedric Doumbé put on an absolute kickboxing clinic. He could play combination and low kick from both stances. He could play it to, from his left to his right. He can head movement. I was saying on Twitter, he plays boxing head movement with his hands down and kickboxing, which is super hard to do. Super hard to do. Not like how the Thais do it. The Thais can do it. They can drop their hands and make you miss kicks and make you miss punches, but they'll do it right in front of you. Cedric Doumbé will be doing it on the move, going backwards the way you're taught not to do, and he'll still make it happen offensively. This dude is a talent. This dude is a talent, an exceptional talent who, the way he sells himself, like the extra stuff, the charisma, the way he looks, he does this thing like if you miss like a low kick on him and he slides out the way, he like looks at his feet as if, something just kind of brushed by me. He has the it factor. He is more than just a guy who wins. And then Nicky Holtkin already called him out on Twitter for them to do it, do the damn thing on the 20th of May. Please make it happen. Perfect time. It would be a 9-week camp for him, so he gets a little bit of time to recover. He can go 8 weeks of camp if he wants. That's what we want to see. We want to see Cedric Doumbé go against the best guys in the world. I do not need to see Nicky Holtzkin in a 4-man tournament to make this decision. Don't need to see it. Nicky Holtzkin was the longest reigning champion that they had. They were calling him undefeated. They're calling him unbeatable. Cedric Doumbé sold himself, beat him. And you can make an argument. Nicky Holtzkin was coming off of a tough fight with Myrtle Grunhart, 6-7 weeks before that card. So that fight's all action. It's what you want to see. But I'm telling you, Cedric Doumbé, he has his own style. Everybody's just thinking kickboxing isn't just Dutch style. He's got a good flow of the combination and low kick that you see in Dutch club style, but he's got the movement that you would see, from a, very savvy boxer. Doumbé is the truth. I want to see this guy as much as possible. So shout out to him. go ahead and wrap that card up. We're going to go to England and we're going to talk about your cow. Your cow had some really good stuff. They do, you know how your cow does it. They do your cow 24 and 23 all in the same card. So I will go ahead and talk. I didn't get to see all the fights. Did not get to see all the fights. I'm going to do my best to talk about the fights that I did see. So no offense to those fights. If I miss you, I want to talk about the fights that I did see. All right? Stefan Melitti's fight with Wudichai, Yokao Sanchai Jim, was a very good contrast of styles. And the reason why I say that is rarely do you see a, you know, English fighter so determined to go into the grapple with a tie. But Stefan Melitti was a little bit bigger, you know, a little bit bigger than Wudichai as far as his physical size. And the ties usually fight up in weight, so that's pretty common. But Wudichai was able to win the distant fight with the single body kicks. Again, he wasn't kicking the arm all the time. He was doing a good job of getting it under the elbow and getting it on the body. The way he was able to do this is he would fire it on the return kick. So if he was kicked, he kicked right back. And usually that's the best opportunity to slide it under because the guard is a little loose as the kick returns to the ground. So he would fire it there. And when they were in space, he would step to the side. And when he fired the kick, it would have the angle differently. So if we're both standing in front of each other or our feet are matched up, any kick we throw, you can drop your elbow into your body and then at least take it on the arm. But if I could slide step or if I could skip step or if I put a, you know, skip even into my power leg. You don't have to skip your power leg, but you can. That can angle yourself in a way with where you position yourself with the skip or where you step to the side to get under the elbow while someone's in their natural stance. So they think to just follow you in a brief moment and it's too late, you know, because they're just trying to even their legs up, but you've already moved and you've already found your spot and you get another effective shot to the body. Really, really good stuff by Wudichai in those moments. Stefan Melitti, on the other hand, he knew how to work the clinch. And I remember I had a really great shout out to the people who on Facebook recorded, streamed some of these things live, left them on their Facebook wall for me to get a hold of them. That was how I was able to watch it. This particular fight's literally on the Yokao Boxing Facebook page. But there's a person who had like an hour of footage and they got a couple fights in there. But I was able to piece together some of the fights from this card based off of that work. So thank you to the people who you're there, paid, watching the show live. You decided to put up a phone camera for me. Appreciate it. So does my listeners. Melitti, in his corner, after he scored and won one exchange in the grapple, I heard someone yell, "You have the advantage in the grapple. You have your advantage in the clinch." So they're yelling for him to go to the clinch. Whenever Melitti played in space, he would throw a kick here and there, but Wudichai would win those battles. But whenever he got into the clinch, he was very active. He got his arm into the crook of the elbow, so in the turn, so he got one arm in there. He played the other arm around the collar tie in the neck, or he played the other arm in the other bend of the elbow by the bicep. So he played with that inside that work, and he worked knees, or he'd get to the body lock. And if he got to the body lock, he would just score knees consistently. He'd loop his knees. He'd charge them up. Kind of like a skip bounce to kind of bring them in. He just kept working, and then he made sure that when the ref broke up the exchange, it was because he was kneeing and holding Wudichai on the ropes. Wudichai would just kind of wait and then try to get an escape and then throw a kick on the break, but he kept giving up too many of those moments. When we went to the scorecards, the question was, did Melitti's clinch work outdo Wudichai's work in space with the single kicks? Again, not a lot of boxing offered by either guy as far as clean, consistent boxing. This fight really came down to who had the better body work. Like, the better, who had the better scores from their style. And for me, I lean for Melitti to win it. When they go to the cards, we had a split decision, and it went from Melitti. Wudichai was clearly a little surprised. I think he thought his body kick work had done enough. But I was really, really pleased with how this fight took place. I thought it was very, very entertaining. And we move on to the next one. Amy Perny versus Dakota Dechevia. If I could redo my podcast from the other day, I would have spent more time in this. Because this really, it was probably, as it stands, the biggest female fight of the year. Dakota Dechevia is super young. Super young, we're talking about, I believe she's just 17 years old, 16, 17 years old. She goes against Amy Perny, and they fight at 51 kgs. And they put on a show. This is probably the Women's Fight of the Year. When I do my, you know, my year in, you know, kickboxing or kickfighting highlight, it'll have a lot of stuff from this fight because Dakota, again, was able to win in space. Dakota Chivia was able to win in space. Long teep, boxing very, very good. Step knees not too bad. But Amy Pirney was able to be competitive in the space as far as kick. She plays a double kick game. So sometimes she'll play, she'll go low kick to body kick. Or sometimes she'll switch stance with a hook and then fire a body kick. She plays a decent, she's got a good consistent game there. But when they got into the clinch, it was very, very, very clear. It was all, and I mean all, in the favor of Amy Pirney. She would get the full body lock. She did like to the waist. But instead of going for the dump right away, sometimes she would invest the knees, and then get the dump. If she caught a kick, she was strong. She was able to get to the sweep. If she threw a knee and then stepped back, she could wait. And when she waited after the knee was thrown, After the knee was thrown, she would wait for Dakota to throw back, and then she would sweep the other leg. And she must have gotten at least, I'm counting in my mind right now, at least 10-plus dumps in the fight. Just did a good job of it. Dakota DeChevia was game throughout, and their third round was an absolute piece of Muay Thai work. Just absolute great. Everybody should watch it. If you ever think that, oh, women's fights aren't technical, women's fights aren't yada, 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 watch this fight, watch this round. Because they really did a great job. Not a good job, a great job of scoring consistent offense. That whole round was pretty much in space, unlike the other rounds where there was a lot of clinch. That one was really in space. And I was really, really impressed with both girls' work to find consistent offense. I'd say my favorite thing about the fight for Dakota DeChevia was round five. I gave her round five. But the whatever advice she got in the corner, she got out and she went after it. She fought like somebody that was losing, and I'm critical of it because I've seen people who have been down in fights two rounds, and they've showed no effort in the third round to try to score down or anything. They just keep working as if, you know, all's well that ends well. That is not what I need if I'm down. If you are down, I want to see some urgency. I want to see some aggression in your offense to try to get that other person out of there. And she went to work. Like, she really, really... Like, she kept closing the distance, but this time she didn't allow herself to get into the full grapple. She would get close enough to get a hold of the biceps, and she started firing elbows. She would work step knee, push away, elbow, kicks in space, teeps. She did a good job. Pirney was scoring here and there, but I thought DeChevia was really bringing it. DeChevia tried a couple of spinning back elbows and so on, but I just think that the hole was too big. Pirney had done enough in the early rounds. Very, very entertaining fight. Very good stuff. Moving forward, Dakota DeChevia, as I mentioned before, she is like 16, 17, 18 years old. I think she's going on 18 this year. She's got all the tools. This fight needs to happen again at some period of time down the road. Doesn't need to happen now. Doesn't need to happen in a year or 2 years, but they should do it again. When she grows up a little bit more, when she gets a little bit more physically set into what her adult body is going to be as a woman, she'll have the strength to handle some of the girls and some of the things that she dealt with in the grapple. Because in her mind, that's what she's got to be thinking. I lost in the clinch. I lost in the grapple. What are things that I can do? How do I make sure that I don't let her get to full body lock? How do I make sure that I'm patient? Maybe I give up two knees before I do a return knee when we're in a clinch. That way I can't get swept. She should start game planning for, okay, this is how I would fight Pirney different. This is how I would do it. Amy Pirney, simple. You got the victory. You know you're stronger in the clinch. It's her job to get better in the clinch. It's not your job to try to be like, oh, she's going to adjust my clinch like that. No, 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 no. You be you until she figures out how to beat it. So I'm expecting Amy Pirney to continue to go, continue to compete. Both of these women, of course, exciting opportunities in Japan, or not so much Japan, but in Thailand. So they both, I think, have made the trip. It's very, very common that you see a lot of people from the UK gyms make the trip to Thailand. So definitely shout out to Amy Pirney and Dakota DeChevia for putting on an awesome performance. I hope you girls do it again. And if your bodies get a little bit bigger, who knows where you stop? Of course, the big fight of all the women in England is Iman Barlow. Iman Barlow campaigns at 54 kgs. So for those of you who are wondering, it's about 7 pounds higher. than where these girls usually fight. So if their bodies get a little bit bigger, maybe that's something for down the road. You know, both, in particular, Dakota Tivy is tall enough, but they got to put on the physical body if they're going to get there. If that doesn't happen, of course, there's still opportunities all over Europe, but at 51 kgs, you're going to run out of opposition eventually. 54 to 60 is where the best female fighters in the world usually roam. So hopefully that opportunity comes down the road. Liam Harrison, I mean, there's Jordan Watson's also the another fight I'm going to talk about in this card, but I'm going to talk about the Liam Harrison fight first. It is so cool to see Liam Harrison when he's aggressive, and he really came after Ryan McKee early, got him hurt, and got him out of there. But this is the technique that I really wanted to focus on. I want to talk to you guys about. If you are hurt at all in a fight, if you are hurt at all in a fight, I mean this seriously, do not, and I mean do not, throw elbows when you're hurt. It's not that it's impossible. Not that it's impossible to score and so on. But the reward for the score is much less significant than the damage that you take from the defense that you give up when you try to throw in particular a lead elbow. If you're going to be hurt, go ahead and go behind your guard, and maybe you throw in between. Maybe you say, I'm going to go behind my guard. I've been hurt. Let me buy some time. Let me go into the clinch, and then I'll look to score some knees in the clinch, buy myself some time to get better. Or maybe you go, okay, I'm going to go ahead and keep my earmuffs up. When I feel him throw his hook, he gets wide before he throws his second shot. I'm going to look to blast something over the top. Or maybe you notice he throws one shot, goes into the knees when he sees that I'm hurt. So maybe you're going to go ahead and time it, and you try to get that big, big punch when he's going for the knee. Don't try to elbow there. It's just a recommendation. Now, let me be clear. I say this to my students all the time. You can score. There's a good possibility that he could score that elbow. It really is. I'll go ahead and say it. There's a good possibility that you could score that technique. But you give up so much in the defensive, you know, part of the game when you give that a try. Ryan McKee was hurt. And he was actually in a different stance. And then he storms from a southpaw stance to an orthodox stance to try to throw this elbow. He misses. He's already hurt. A right hand scores. Liam Harrison then puts a lead uppercut behind it and then a big right hand over the top. And Mickey is done. Ref jumps in there, calls a TKO stoppage. That's a big risk to take. In particular, against a guy like Liam Harrison, who's just been an, you know, an all-time legend in Full Rules Muay Thai. And he's a guy who, you know, he's been getting low kick stoppages and that kind of stuff, whatever. But he's got hands, too. He can crack a little bit. So I'm really hoping that we get to see him again. Yukao usually does two events there a year. I want to see Liam Harrison against high opposition again. Of course, I'd like to see the rematch with Fabio Pinca. Looks like they're going to do it again in France. He's awesome. Really, really good stuff. Really good showing. And just to see him aggressive like that again. Because he really, you know, blood in the water. When he got Mickey hurt, he knew this kid's got to get out of here. And that's the way you want to fight. Last fight I'm going to talk about in this card. Now, again, there are other fights. Jake Purdy got a TKO victory. I wasn't able to get footage of that. You know, he's another guy from Bad Company. So shout out to them and their success. Mike Estelik got, I believe he lost by TKO to Craig Coakley, if I'm remembering correctly. There were other fights on this card. I wasn't able to get them all. I am talking about the ones that I saw because I'm trying to give you guys narrative off of visual more so than just storyline off of results. I got to see a lot of fights, so I'll do my best to give you fights. Next one I'm going to talk about, last one I'm going to talk about for this card, is Jordan Watson as he gets a points victory over Sorgraw. Watson was better throughout. I think he was better everywhere, you know. But I think one of the biggest things about him being better in this particular fight was he did a really good job of what I call second shot offense. So there were several times in a fight where Sagral would throw like a body kick. When he threw this body kick, it was caught easily by Watson. And Watson could have just dropped the kick and fired, you know, and fired his own kick. He did that a couple times. But my favorite thing that Watson did was when he caught the body kick, he'd put the two, his right hand, he'd put that in the belly, and he'd come up with the left hook upstairs. So he got two scores instead of one score. That's playing the game, you know what I'm saying? In particular, if you're having success with your boxing, because Watson was consistently scoring with his boxing when he got into the range, because Sugar would almost like wait for the clinch to happen. And while he was waiting for the clinch to happen, Jordan Watson would just keep hitting him and just keep tagging him, head snapping back. Really, really good stuff. I was really pleased with the work that Watson put in this week. I just thought that it was a complete performance. He did it several times. He did it several times where he caught the kick and he put in two hands for offense. And again, that first shot to the body, that's an okay shot. But the left hook upstairs, that was a mean one. And he did that several times. And he read clearly that the body was leaning on the, waiting for the clinch. And he would just keep letting his hands go and scoring consistently. Very clear victory for Jordan Watson. Very good stuff. Of course, we know in June he's got the K1 Max World Grand Prix. I think they just call him middleweight. Don't call him Max anymore, but he's on his way. He's on his way to big opportunities. Very, very happy to see him have success. What I saw of the Chikao fight card was awesome. I love that the crowd gave a standing ovation to the Pernie Dakota Tchevna fight. I love that, the view I had of the crowd going crazy and the corner going crazy when Liam Harrison got the stoppage KO. It was all fun, all around, really good stuff. Hopefully more from them, and I would love it if Yakao did more than just the two events a year. I'm hoping that they up it up to four at some period of time. They're selling out when they do it, so either do four in England or do two in England and then do two or three elsewhere. But I think the brand's big enough for them to give that a shot. We're going to go ahead and move on to the last fight card that I'm going to talk about. And, the ACB card was a lot of fun. I'll go ahead and tell you this now. I've had you guys for an hour, but I've been enjoying this. So I've got just a few fights on this card that I really, really want to talk about. And by a few, five of it. But ACB Kickboxing, Paris, France, into YouTube, and the entire card is on there. The entire card. I think if you just put in ACB Kickboxing, you'll see. The entire card from yesterday is already up. Alexander Setsarenko goes against Cyril Benzoquin, and Alexander Setsarenko continued to show his decline. This is a victory. This is a guy who once upon a time had a victory over Artem Levin. So it's like, he has the skill set, but now he came in fighting like, some sort of, 1950s bruiser boxer, left hand low, right hand at the head, walking you down, looking to get an exchange. He offered no combination in kicks all fight. He would throw a single kick here and there, I'd say he probably threw less than 10 kicks total. He'd walk down, get into that range, and really offer nothing other than pressure. And I was like, okay, this pressure is fine if it ends up turning into something. But he kept doing leap hooks and leap overhands, and it looked like he was determined to try to win by KO. Cyril Benzoquin is not a elite kickboxer, but he looked like an elite kickboxer in moments because he would just let his hands go. He realized that Setsarenko was just committed to just walking him down and throwing big offense. He realized that was all he wanted to do. And once he figured out that, okay, if these shots aren't getting rid of me and he's just going to stand in front of me while I'm offensive back, I'm going to have a lot of chances to score offense. And he did. Combinations of kick, back to the hands combinations. He'd put like a knee and he put hand combinations behind it, put another kick in there. Just whatever he wanted. Because all Setsarenko did was just stay behind his guard and wait for the finish and then go back to pressuring and looking for big hulking shots over the top. Cyril Benzoquin, who I believe was like 7-4 going into this fight, he gets a clear decision victory. But I think the more disappointing thing is Alexander Setsarenko once upon a time fought in glory, man. He once fought in glory. So this is the guy who was a notable name who, he lost to, Nicky Holtkin? No shame there. This is a guy who I thought the future would be much different for. And it just wasn't the case at all. Now he's still getting opportunities. ACB, still a solid kickboxer, good name to have on your card. But the guy who came out there, his body was different. He had a gut to him, like he wasn't the in shape, very high level killer that I saw back in the day. Because the guy I saw back in the day was tough, So definitely want to see more from him moving down the road. I won't say he was ever a killer, but he was a very good fighter. So excuse me, let me take killer off the board. The guy I saw, who was a very talented kickboxer, is not that anymore. Just a solid guy who can get on a card and fill it, but I don't know if he could be the best in the world anymore. Next fight on the card I'm going to talk about is another kind of old-school throwback. We're going to talk about Yuri Besmertny as he gets a victory over Jabril Ayo. Jabril is a guy who I thought in moments really threw hard, strong shots. Like he had committed to, all right, this is going to be my exchange. Like this, I'm going to sit down in my pocket. Both guys played in the pocket all day. But he would sit down, throw good right hands. After he threw powerful 1-2s, he would grab the guard and he'd sneak a knee in. He did great body work in the second round. One of my favorite body work fights, performances in a while, even though he comes up short. Straight right hands downstairs, 1-2s upstairs, put the knee in there, teeps to the body, kicks to the body. He played it very, very well in the second round. The problems were 1 and 3. I thought he gave up a little bit too much in 1 and 3, not in terms of giving up in terms of quitting, but in terms of he allowed too much offense to happen on him. When he allowed that offense to happen, I thought that Yuri Besmertny had scored clean boxing in spots. Like he was able to score enough clean boxing in those spots, clean kickboxing in those spots with his combo flow. And that turned into, of course, a positive result for him down the road, you know, as far as that final scorecard. But man, third round, I think, was the real killer for Jabril. I just think that he waited all round for just the power right hand, which he was scoring. But he never built off of it. He never got much more off of it other than just the offense that you saw early in round one and in round two. He didn't really do anything to take over the round. He just scored power in shots. I thought that the clear person winning throwing work was Yuri Besmertny. Besmertny, after a very consistent round of combo flow and pressure and offensive volume, it made me revisit his career because this guy really, really was a guy who had the potential to be something. I mean, it started off with the, for those of you who remember it, the short-lived Fight Code was one of the many promotions that emerged as K-1 was kind of going away. It was built on the strength of Armin Petrosian, and Georgia Petrosian, of course, was the main event. Armin Petrosian was in their tournament, and it is where a young Chingiz Alazov really made his way into the scene, 18, 19 years old. That's when we first got to see him. Anyways, Armin Petrosian, he wins a decision close over Armin Petrosian, and then they decided he shouldn't have got a decision, so he decided to do it again. So then he knocked Armin Petrosian out clean with one of the bitter KOs of the 2011 year. So they decided to do it again, didn't go his way. But at that time, I thought that we had something here. He got a victory over Setsukorn after that, victory over Drago Gago after that, and then Roberto Coco, another victory in Italy, but I think that one was on a cut. He got things going, and I remember I said, hey, this guy's a prospect, he might be something down the road, and so on. He got the opportunity to prove that he's one of the better fighters in the world. Not everybody gets that chance. Not everybody gets the chance to go against the opposition that would make you say, this guy's elite. The problem was Besmertny did not pass the test. He got Drago late. Drago was already on the decline a little bit by the time that he got him. And Drago was doing some good things before that head kick KO happened. I'm going to go ahead and shoot you these names. Apriche Bunyarathan. That was an extension round, but he lost that one. He loses in 2013. He loses to David Kyria, Artur Kashenko, Kareem Gaji, Steve Moxon, Jean Kalabali. That was his 2013 year. He had a victory like early in the year against Alexander Zakharov. I'm looking at his wiki right now. But other than that, lost to Pracha, lost to Kyria, lost to Kishinko, lost to Gaji, lost to Moxon, lost to Kalabali. What does that tell you? When he went against the elite of the world, the better guys in the world, Kishinko, elite, you know, like elite fighter, Kareem Gaji, was glory top five, top four, got really had some good fights, despite the fact that he lost to Nicky Holtz and that kind of deal, whatever. Still fought the best champion, was champion for Bellator, fighting for that title again. David Kyria was champion for glory. Those are the fights that you need to win if you're going to be elite. And not to mention, the next year he loses to Andy Sauer, loses to Cedric Dumbe in that year. Those are the names. It didn't go his way. He still had a really good kickboxing career, but he wasn't able to beat the elite names, and he had the opportunity to beat the elite names. And that's how this game works sometimes. That is how this game works sometimes. We move on to the last few fights I'm going to talk about in the card. Song Sakoi as he gets a victory over Stefan Aremia is a guy I've seen fight several times on some of the Super Combat cards. He was absolutely schooled in kickboxing acumen, and I mean school. Like, this thing was not close in kickboxing acumen when he went against Song Sakoi. Here it is again. Another Chinese fighter giving himself an opportunity outside of China. Huge. Gotta have it. This was a clear, one-sided kickboxing performance by Song Sakoi, who was very, very patient. He was able to score in spots very well. And I'd say my favorite thing about this performance, outside of the fact that he was so good with his boxing, his movement, his kicks here and there, his defense, the favorite thing about this performance was in round three of the fight. Aremia had done something illegal, and I guess Song Sakoi looked at the ref because maybe it was something that was stressed to him in his language very well. So he looked over at the ref like, wait a minute, why didn't you call that, or did you say the stop, or that can do whatever. In that moment, Aremia, who had just been getting, you know, beaten all fight, not even getting close to landing consistent offense, just getting kickboxed to death, in that moment, he, for whatever reason, he gets a hold, or like, he starts throwing hands. Before, because the ref kind of like said something but didn't break, and then he threw hands and he caught Song clear with some shots, like two or three shots, after not getting those shots at all during the fight on his own. The ref came in and said, hey, don't hold the leg, that kind of do whatever, but the damage was done. He pissed Song Sakoi off. So in the last 10 seconds of it, Song comes after him, throwing vicious combos, put a high kick in there, low kick. He came after him super strong at the very end of that fight, and I just thought that it was just really, really cool, because send that message. You ain't no punk. You know what I'm saying? And Aremia came after him, threw strong hands, I thought, but was missing everything. In that brief moment, that was his only chance to score. It came off as dirty, and Song Sakoi made him pay for it. I want to see this kid more. This kid is talented. Song Sakoi is a kid who, S-O-N-G-S-H-A-O-Q-U-I, I believe is the pronunciation. It might be pronounced Sakui. Very, very talented guy. Very slick. I need to see him against other opposition. Next fight on the card, I got two more to talk about, and we'll wrap the show up. Eddie Slamati puts together one of his better performances against David Mejia. The thing about this performance, it showed the good and the bad of Eddie Slamati. I thought David did a good job in space of really throwing combos. And I mean really throwing combos. He closed the distance, he'd go 1, 2, 3, hook to the body, and just start ripping, and then he put a low kick on the end. Where he struggled was Mejia couldn't hit him hard. Like, he couldn't do anything to stop him, slow him, affect him. Because of that, Slamati was able to move, play with good movement, combinations, jumping scissor kicks, jumping hook kicks. He really, really scored well. And I think I'd make the argument that Dave Mejia probably won round one. I thought that Slamati was a little bit too slick for his own good. But round two, he was slick with effective offense being scored consistently. Anytime he got David to go backwards, combination low kick was there. He played with a nice slick step back game where he'll look to fire head kicks. He switched stances a lot, would go hook, head kick high, go back to his defense, and then play low kick, combination low kick afterwards. It was probably one of the better performances from Slamati, and it reminded you of why this kid was once. Why he's used in glory, why he's considered one of the better fighters in the weight class. Again, he's lost in some of his step-up bouts. Of course, we all know that Misaki Nori went to his home, you know, went into his country and, you know, got a stoppage victory off of him. So we know that those opportunities are there. We know that they're there for, him. He just has got to put together the wins to get him. You know, I picked him to beat Sanchai. Didn't go my way that night. It didn't go Slamati's way either. That's what we need from him next. We need consistent kickboxing. We need this guy to be this athlete all the time, because he was as slick as it comes. That movement, that combination flow, awesome. We wrap the show up as we talk about Chinggis Alazov going against Muhammad Handouf. Here's the thing about Muhammad Handouf. Handouf actually did a good job of fighting. Like, he did a good job of kickboxing. Like, he didn't do anything wrong. Like, his combination flow, when he had the opportunities, I thought that he's strong, and I thought that he proved that he could be something down the road. Sometimes you just go against somebody who's better. And Chingiz Alazov was better than he was. Chingiz Alazov, mean with his teeth, mean with his body kicks. He really plays with his boxing combinations. And then when things settle, he fires a good body kick. He fires teeps. He doesn't give you down times where he's not pressuring or looking for some sort of offensive technique. The one technique that I wanted to focus on, of all the many that he scored, he plays combination and kick well. He plays both stances. He plays with his hook well in both stances, meaning that he gets things off of his hook. He gets to find the right hand off the hook, the body kick off the hook, the low kick off the hook. He can do it consistently, and he can play it off the hook, push you, and then find offense behind it. He can do it however you want it. One of my favorite things that he did was his kick return game. If you miss a kick, he's going to kick you right back. He's got that down. But my favorite thing is he knows how to go third. And a lot of high-level athletes in the world, high-level champions, they don't know how to go third. Some people know how to go first. Some people can fight in between. But a lot of people don't know how to go third, and he's got third down. He would fire a body kick. As soon as the body kick scored, a kick return would come from the opposition, would come from Hadouf. And as soon as he did it, another body kick would come up from him, and he would win that exchange. He'd get two kicks, you get one kick. He ain't playing. He's not letting you just leave with that score. He's not letting you leave with that exchange. He wants the last word, and that's very important. Having the last word in an argument, not always as good. Having the last word in a kickboxing exchange, always good. He go kick, kick would come his way, he'd kick right back. He showed just another wrinkle, and this is a guy who I just praised a couple days ago because he's getting this big opportunity in K1 in June. He showed why he's one of the better fighters in the world, and that opportunity in June is going to prove it even more. Very, very talented guy, very skilled. I can't wait to see more from him down the road. He's fighting again next weekend. He's on an old-school schedule. I cracked the joke on Twitter that he's fighting like the guys used to fight in the 2000s. You know, in the early 2000s, they're fighting all the time. So shout-out to him. Thank you to all the listeners. I went a little bit longer today, but I really wanted to give you guys a fun, full breakdown of kick fighting. And you'll see me in another week. I've got a really fun series that I'm going to play with next week. I don't know how many results I'm going to do. I'm just going to focus on the series next week. So thank you all my listeners. I actually do have to end the show on a bad note, unfortunately. I mean, it's just a lot of you guys know that I train fighters for a living. And one of the fighters that I train is Johnny Hendricks. And we've had, you know, our struggles in the past as far as weight cut goes and so on. Because Johnny's just, he's not that he's eating horrible or that he's a glutton or anything like that. Physically, his body just puts on weight so easy. So when we have to cut to 170, he has to do so much more cutting. We made the decision recently to go to 185 as a team. I said, we might be going against bigger, taller guys, but it's much safer and you are a much better athlete at that weight than you are trying to cut all the weight down. Like it's, we're doing ourselves a disservice. As soon as we made that decision, he was able to get a victory. And, because we weren't losing it on the scale, you know, we thought that there was an argument we won the fight before, but we knew for sure that we weren't losing this fight on the scale. And that's very, very important. My focus here personally is the whole world should know, as a guy who's been through it, who's seen horrible weight cuts that put people in bad shape, and made the decision to stop doing that forever. They come into play and they catch up with you, and you never know when they do. And Jordan Coe is an athlete from England who lost his life weight cutting for a fight in Thailand this past weekend. There is a JustGiving.com. There is a fundraiser where they're trying to give, I think it's 5,000 euros for them to fly the body back home to the family. So definitely check that out. Go to like a Damien Trainer or a Jordan Watson or Liam Harrison, all those guys have got the link on their wall. We want to do our best to get Jordan back to his family. But athletes, I love you guys. I love combat sports so much. It really is. It's my livelihood. I love the game. I sat down, I watched kickboxing all day yesterday, and before this podcast, I watched kickboxing all day today. I love the sport, but there are dangers that come with being inside of the ring, inside of the cage. That's dangerous enough to add the new danger of weight cut to it. As a person who went through it, we did it because we were ranked really, really high. We just kept kind of looking for those opportunities because, you know, that's where we made our name in the sport. as a person who's gone through that and made the decision with my athlete, that's what we're not going to do that anymore. I am telling you guys, it is not worth it to cut a huge amount of weight. So if you can't carry yourself low, if you do not have your weight managed on a regular basis, leave that weight class alone. Fight in the next one. As much as you might seem like it's scarier because they're bigger, it's better for you to be at your strongest self than for you to weaken yourself down and then go against a guy who might be at his strongest self down there. Thank you all for listening to prayers and condolences to Jordan Cole's family. That's just me as a Christian guy saying in the Bible, when Jesus sees the people mourning over the death of Lazarus, Jesus weeps. He mourns with them. So when I say prayers and condolences, I am speaking from a Christian's perspective of the God who sent his son to die on the cross for our sins, so loved us when he lived on the earth that he pursued hearts in such a way. When I say prayers and condolences, that's what I mean. I really mean that God who gave that loving gift, I pray that he would be with your family in a downtime in the way that Jesus was with the family of Lazarus in their downtime. I want to be there with Jordan Coe's family. So please, I do not mean to offend if you ever hear me say prayers and condolences. I've seen on Facebook that people kind of see that as kind of an offensive thing. It means that you're not taking action. I've said the combination of both. One, love to anybody who's lost someone in the sport, whether through the combat or through the weight cut. And two, I want you to know that, you know, through my faith, I've got another genuine love for you and I desire for you to do well. And then three, I also had the action part of it for those who might be offended by that, by telling you to go to the websites or to the Facebook pages of those guys and give to that family so that they can help get their son home. God bless everybody. Thank you for listening to my podcast and have a good one.